of founded by Delta Force, retiree, and composed of many combat veterans. And they were hired to perform this private security function by Energy Transfer Partners. And it was a very disturbing set of revelations in reading these daily situation reports that they put out. A clearly militarized counterintelligence program established by Tiger Swan to address a domestic, you know, protest situation. And what the reports showed was an intent to gather information through all sorts of means, infiltrate those who were gathered in opposition to the Dakota Access Pipeline, and to try to manipulate them, and to try to increase rifts between them, and to try to increase tensions. And also in the reporting that Tiger Swan was doing, it was quite clear, based on those I interviewed, including lawyers that I interviewed, that also it seems that what they were trying to do was make the water protectors and those resisting the construction of the pipeline appear to be more dangerous than they were, to increase a more stringent response by law enforcement. And as was said in the title of the piece, the framework that Tiger Swan used was also one that seemed to be much more geared from, you know, its experience in war zones in Iraq and Afghanistan, and referring to the water protectors as jihadists, and essentially, you know, seeing this as a war zone situation and treating it that way.
Antonio, we have to wrap up this discussion, but I'd like to ask you to stay with us, and we'll post the continuation of the discussion, what this means for fossil fuel industry resistance, who is the founder of Tiger Swan, Jim Reese, and this question of whether he's being considered for FBI director, and also the relationship between Tiger Swan and Blackwater. We'll discuss this and post it online at democracynow.org. Antonio Yuhas, oil and energy journalist. We will link to her piece on paramilitary security tracking and targeting NODAPL activists as jihadists at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Renee Feltz, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alfonso.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is about 5:01. Up next is the KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Unhappy about the current political regime? Want to do something about it? Something social justice related? And how do you find out about these things? Portland Resistance Calendar lets you know about a lot of these happening in the Portland area for the next week. It's a weekly podcast. It's a blog. It's a calendar. It's a floor cleaner. It's updated on Fridays. Learn more at kboo.fm/resist.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. From our hands to yours, celebrating 44 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods and an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Multnomah County adopts one of the country's most aggressive policies to avert climate change.
More than 1,000 people are expected at Sunday's Portland Stands United Against Hate. We speak to event organizers.
We get comments from the mayor's office on the city's plans for Sunday's rallies.
This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 2nd, 2017. I'm Reuben Lawrence.
And I'm Linda Olson-Osterlund. Yesterday, the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners adopted one of the country's most aggressive policies to avert climate change. By a unanimous vote, the commissioners approved a resolution that calls for 100% of the electricity consumed in the county to come from clean, renewable sources by 2050. The resolution also calls for all renewable energy sources for public and private buildings and all transportation by 2050. The vote came just hours before Donald Trump announced that he was withdrawing the United States from the Paris Climate Accords. 70 cities around the world have adopted similar resolutions, but Multnomah County takes it further by including buildings and heating and transportation. The resolution also requires the county to find ways to minimize the financial impact on low-income residents in the event that costs rise in the transition to renewable energy. Current data shows that over 65% of the electricity consumed in the county is generated by coal or natural gas. Under the resolution, nuclear power has been excluded, so a ramp-up of solar, wind, and other emerging technologies will be needed for the county to achieve its objective.
The rallies on Sunday are not the only events at Terry Schrank Plaza this weekend. On Saturday morning, demonstrators will gather for the Portland edition of the March for Truth, a national movement calling for an independent investigation into the Trump campaign's ties to Russia. Other demands include the release of Trump's tax returns and other transparency measures. The Portland event will include a rally at Terry Schrank Plaza starting at 11 a.m. with several speakers, followed by a march along an as-yet-undisclosed route. It was organized by several different local groups, including Oregon Indivisible and the Washington County Democrats. Organizer Yi-Wen Chang spoke with KBOO on Monday and stressed that extensive safety precautions are being taken in light of heightened tensions since the election of Donald Trump and, more recently, the racist attack on a MAX train. The rally will start with a moment of silence for all the victims of that attack, led by a member of the Muslim Educational Trust. Speakers include representatives of Oregon, members of the organizing groups, and community leaders, according to the March for Truth PDX Facebook page.
Multiple rallies are planned for Portland this weekend, as we've mentioned. One of the biggest is entitled Portland Stands United Against Hate. The rally is scheduled for Sunday from 12:30 to 4 p.m. along Southwest 4th Avenue near City Hall. More than 10 groups have gathered together to organize the event. KBOO's Ray Bodwell spoke with the planning committee member Wael Asadi to get more details.
I'm speaking with Wael L. Asadi. Wael is a member of the planning committee, Portland Stands United Against Hate, and he's agreed to take a few minutes to tell our listeners about this Sunday's rally by City Hall.
We called this rally as a response to the right-wing extremist Jeremy Christian, who attacked and killed two men and wounded another for daring to challenge his Islamophobic attack on two young women. But we also have called and been planning for this because we understand this is not an isolated event. Rather, it represents an emboldening of the far right across this country. And we've seen a slate of attacks that are happening across the country, including another attack here in Portland. It wasn't a physical attack, but intimidation that occurred against two Muslim individuals yesterday. So we understand this phenomenon is growing, and we are calling for people across Portland to come out and join us for this rally to send a loud and clear message that Portland will not stand against this racist hate and violence. This is a peaceful demonstration. It is separate from the far-right demonstration. It is at City Hall. It is adjacent to it, and it is separate from some of the other rallies that are being planned that day. We understand that security and safety is a big concern. It is one of our top priorities. So we have put together a plan to for safety of. We have been in communication with city officials and the mayor of the event. They've told us this is permitted. They are shutting down 4th Avenue to ensure that we have the space available for it. We have a peacekeeping team that we are training right now, and that will be out there. The police have communicated to us that they will form a perimeter around the far-right rally as well as around our rally to act as a buffer and to ensure that there is no confrontation between the two sides. And we are urging all the participants in our rally to maintain a peaceful presence while we're there. We will be sending the loudest, the strongest message that Portland doesn't stand for this hate.
Well, what kind of turnout do you expect?
We have 1,200 people that are RSVP'd as going on Facebook. We have a group of over 60 endorsing organizations that include some of the most prominent social justice, immigrant rights, unions, the CARE organ, which is the Council on American Islamic Relations, and our organizations are mobilizing for this rally. It's not entirely clear what the numbers are going to be. We expect to have at least 1,000 people, but it could be much, much larger turnout because we are getting a lot of support from both the general public as well as from our organizing committees. We do believe we will have safety in numbers, and we also believe that our numbers will show that people who stand against this racist hate are a majority and that the far-right extremists are a minority in Portland.
Once again, perhaps you could remind the listeners of the time and place of the rally?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, the rally will be at City Hall. We will also have all of 4th Avenue from City Hall moving south shut down and reserved for our rally for overflow in case it gets bigger. People can check out our Facebook event page for Portland Stands United Against Hate. We have all of our relevant information there, and they can contact the organizers if they have any questions or concerns. I'll leave with the message that we believe that we simply cannot ignore this growing extremist far right. If we do, that will not stop them. They will continue to grow. That this city has to stand up. We have to reclaim our city, and we have to send a clear message that Portland does not stand against this racist hate, and we hope that people will join us.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
Earlier today, KBOO's Jasmine Moneymaker spoke with Michael Cox of the mayor's office on Portland's plan for security during Sunday's rallies.
You know, we expect demonstrations and counter-demonstrations in downtown Portland on Sunday, and in the wake of the horrible events of last week where a man driven by hate killed two people on a commuter train in Portland, Oregon, we have some concerns about the security situation.
What are your specific security concerns? Where do you see the potential for problems to arise?
Well, we know that in Portland there's sort of been a couple potential showdowns between right-wing so-called patriots or the alt-right and left-wing anarchists or Antifa, and we are concerned that this weekend could be a high-profile opportunity for conflict.
It looks like Antifa is scheduling their protest for Chapman Square directly across the street, directly across Madison from the permitted site of the alt-right Trump free speech protest. Both of these groups have expressed their willingness to resort to violence. It looks like the only real hope of de-escalation could be the response of the police.
Well, the law enforcement situation on the ground is potentially complicated by the fact that Terry Shrunk Plaza, where the so-called free speech rally will be taking place, is a federal parcel, while Chapman Park, where the so-called Antifa protest will be taking place, is a city park. So one park is policed by federal law enforcement, the other by Portland Police Bureau. We have been in constant communication with law enforcement at all levels, focused on coordination and focused on putting together a game plan that can keep everybody safe while they can safely express their First Amendment rights. And the top goal there is really to keep the group separated.
So you're saying that we can expect federal and city police officers to be in the streets, possibly not working in smooth coordination?
No, quite the opposite. We can expect there to be local and federal law enforcement, but we can also expect their response to be highly coordinated.
So have the police received any special training or instruction on how to deal with the specific groups that they will be interacting with on Sunday?
The Portland Police Bureau are highly experienced managing protests, including counter demonstrations. They're trained on crowd control. They have policies in place around crowd control and are going to be prepared as best as we can to deal with the complicated and contentious situation.
Have they been authorized to use non-lethal crowd control tactics and weapons such as rubber bullets, tear gas?
Their policies around crowd control and protests have been long established, and the tactical on-the-ground decisions are going to be left to the commanding officer.
Is there anything that you would recommend the peaceful protester on the street do to avoid being physically harmed on Sunday?
Our Portland Police Bureau attempts to be highly communicative during any protest or demonstration. They consistently provide instruction to those who are present, and we encourage demonstrators to listen to what the Portland Police Bureau is telling you and follow instructions accordingly.
Are there any communication platforms or methods that you would recommend people use to find the information that they need to stay safe on Sunday?
Yeah, first and foremost, I would encourage those on Twitter to follow the Portland Police Bureau. During the last number of protests, they've been quite diligent and consistent about communicating messages to the public and to the news media through that channel.
That was Jasmine Moneymaker speaking with Michael Cox of the mayor's office on Portland's plan for security during Sunday's rallies.
Do I move you? Are you willing? Do I groove you? Is it thrilling?
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather calls for a cloudy day with a 20% chance of rain. The high temperature will be about 70. East of the Cascades in Hood River, you can expect a mostly sunny day with a high of about 75. On this day in 1924, President Calvin Coolidge signed the Snyder Act, also known as the Indian Citizenship Act. The law finally conferred citizenship on America's indigenous people. It was enacted partially in recognition of the thousands of Native Americans who had joined the armed forces during World War I. The quote of the day is from Will Rogers, who said, quote, "Congress is so strange, a man gets up to speak and says nothing. Nobody listens, and then everyone disagrees."
If you are, then let's start swinging. The answer better be good.
amazes me.
Multnomah County Republican Party Chairman James Buechel has made headlines across the U.S. this week. But they may not be the kind of headlines that will help the party or swing voters around to their cause. KBOO's Ray Bodwell has these comments.
In the aftermath of last Friday's vicious attack on a TriMet MAX train, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler asked two right-wing groups to cancel their upcoming rallies. On Wednesday, Act for America, the anti-Muslim group behind the June 10th March Against Sharia, responded by calling the mayor's request a, quote, astonishingly blatant attempt to suppress freedom of discourse, end quote. But organizer Scott Pressler then went on to say, quote, in order to ensure the safety of those who had planned on attending, we have taken a decision to cancel the Portland March. The organizers for this Sunday's Trump-free speech rally refused to cancel their event, and when Wheeler asked the federal government to withdraw their permit, his request was attacked as unconstitutional by the ACLU and ultimately refused by the federal government. And this is probably as it should be. Under the First Amendment, even fringe groups have the right to publicly gather and speak their minds. While this turmoil was swirling around these two alt-right events, the Multnomah County Republican Party chairman, James Buechel, managed to inject himself into the middle of the controversy. In an interview with The Guardian, he said that Republicans should not abandon public discourse, and if necessary, they should arrange for their own security. Asked if this meant making their own arrangements rather than relying on city or state police, Buechel said, quote, yeah, and there are these people arising, like the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters, end quote. For those of you unfamiliar with these groups, the Southern Poverty Law Center describes the Oath Keepers as one of the largest radical anti-government groups in the U.S. today and calls the Three Percenters an anti-government movement that urges violent self-defense against the federal government's efforts to impose gun control and universal health care. Now, you may think that this is a singular, over-the-top response during a particularly emotional time in Portland, but you'd be mistaken. This is not the first time that Buechel's comments have sparked controversy. In 2012, while running for Oregon Attorney General, Buechel made these comments to supporters.
We have regulations all over Oregon that are so complicated nobody can understand them that say you're not really allowed to do anything at all, because if you do anything, it'll make things worse, and the world is about to end as we know it, so everything must stop.
Buechel lost with just 39% of that vote. He ran for the U.S. House of Representatives against Earl Blumenauer in 2014 and did even worse, managing just 20% of the vote. He has not run for public office since, but that has not tempered his enthusiasm for public speaking. Following are just a few comments from YouTube videos of Buechel speaking at public events in February, March, and April of this year.
Republicans, and I stand here as the chairman of the Republican Party, we know that the Oregon government is essentially insane. We are facing a real crisis with this stuff. We have people out there who are trying to take the president down, and those people are enemies of America. I'm a lawyer, and I'm here to tell you we now have an entire generation of judges in place who have no respect for law whatsoever. They are not judges anymore. They are just leftist fixtures who are out there to serve the awful god of power that they worship. Our enemies know that if they keep importing people into this country who know nothing about liberty, have no experience with it, and may not even like it very much, they can and they will change this country. And we are very close to the tipping point where we will never get this country back.
When the 82nd Avenue parade was canceled in April, it was in large part because anti-fascist groups were angered by reports that the hard-right group Bible Believers was planning to march with the Republicans. Buechel denied any knowledge of that and said, quote, the Multnomah County Republican Party is not composed of Nazis and white supremacists. I suspect that most Multnomah County Democrats and progressives actually do not believe that the local Republican Party is full of Nazis and white supremacists. In fact, judging by the consistently poor finishes by Republicans in local elections, it appears that most area voters don't think about Republicans at all. And as long as county Republicans allow the extreme right-wing rhetoric of James Buechel to define the Multnomah County Republican Party, that situation is unlikely to change. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
A man set fire to a casino in the Philippines today, causing 38 deaths, including his own. Government officials hesitated to call the fire a terrorist attack, but the 45th U.S. president immediately tweeted that it was an act of terrorism. The fire comes in the midst of a week of martial law in one part of the Philippines. KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke with local organizer Drew Al-Arzade Miller for more on the developing story.
We are talking today about the current situation in the Philippines, which has been under martial law for more than a week now. And that situation was exacerbated today after a large fire in a casino. Do you have any more information about that situation today?
Yes, I did see that report. And there's conflicting reports as well, because there's also been associations with ISIS, which is actually the grounds that the Philippine government and President Rodrigo Duterte used to declare martial law in Mindanao after a firefight with an alleged ISIS group. So the other thing we have to think about, though, is whatever we understand violence in the Philippines, we have to think about it, the violence of the world, especially in the U.S. geopolitical strategy. This comes at a very unique timing in the sense that we see President Duterte had just been in China and Russia, and that is exactly when the occurrence in the southern Philippines and martial law was declared, and then this recent attack in Manila. And so we really have to evaluate what are the interests at play here. One reporter, William Ingdahl from the University of Princeton, actually has just released an article connecting the ISIS attacks and groups in the Philippines to CIA-backed plans against Duterte, who we see shifting towards China and Russia in relations as opposed to the U.S., which the Philippines has long been a colony of.
Well, it would not be out of character. The U.S. Supposed freedom fighters in Syria that the U.S. has supported with military support and financial support have themselves been linked to Al-Qaeda and in some cases ISIS in order to foment regime change and to overthrow Assad. Does it seem like there is a pattern here, that there's something similar happening with an attempt to destabilize the Duterte regime in the Philippines?
Yes, absolutely. And just I want to give a couple of bases for that. The other thing we have to look at in terms of context is that this comes right after what are called the Balikatan exercises. And the Balikatan exercises have been a 30-year program in which the U.S. trains the Philippine military. And so this is immediately after that training. And so we see another close connection there. And I also want to go back to thinking about the U.S.-backed Marcos dictatorship in the Philippines, under which martial law was last declared. And so in that context, there was a situation called the Plaza Miranda bombing, in which there's a Liberal Party gathering, and there's a bombing, and it was under that context in which Ferdinand Marcos declared martial law, and of course at that time was being backed by the Reagan administration financially. And so we see this as a history within the long history of U.S. support of Philippines.
And just to go back a little bit more in history for people who aren't aware, the Philippines is really the first kind of colony of the United States, with the war against Spain to take over control of the Philippines in 1899 and 1900. I wonder if you could talk about this long history of U.S. involvement.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Thank you so much for raising that. And I wanted to specifically refer to when the U.S. first really took control of the Philippines, and that was in wake of the Spanish-American War, in which there was a staged battle between the Spanish and the Americans, and the Spanish ended up selling the Philippines supposedly to the United States for $20 million. And part of the key piece in that is the U.S. was actually backing and uplifting a Philippine elite who ultimately, for a while, had rebelled but capitulated to U.S. power and U.S. control and will in the Philippines. Again, we know not only is the position of the Philippines right next to China, where we see this rising imperial force as well, but we also know that the Philippines has rich, abundant resources that are coveted by much of the world. And so we have to look at what are the U.S. interests in the Philippines, both in Asia Pacific and militarily, and also in the amount of resources they have, and recognizing that that's been an ongoing plunder of more than 100 years.
Well, and thank you so much for all of the information. Again, if people are interested, there is a Portland Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines, Portland CHRP on Facebook, portlandchrp.com. Drew, thank you so much for joining us here on KBOO today.
Thanks so much, Jinka. Really appreciate it.
This is Jinka Soderberg reporting for KBOO News about the current situation in the Philippines, where martial law has been declared for more than a week.
And now, your daily volunteer producer.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jasmine Moneymaker, Sam Bowman, and Jenka Soderberg. The producer is Ray Bodwell. Our engineer today is Zelos Marchant, and the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Zelos Marchant. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You can also find us on